if I tell you that unicorn exists, an animal of a kind which is called unicorn exists, or that there is a flower which has been born from the sky exists. As a definition, a flower is a flower. Whether it grows in the sky or not, it may not be really existing. But as a definition, you can't reject it. A horse with wings exists. Supposing I say, what is the concept? That horse is an animal like any other horse. With this difference, it has got wings like the wings of the bird. So in the concept there is no problem. Whether such a thing exists or not is a different question. Similarly, the first proposition of this argument is that it is only a definition of God. It does not say therefore God exists. It doesn't start with the proposition God exists and God is than whom nobody is greater. That is not the point. He simply says God is by conception, than whom nothing greater can be conceived. That is all. Now comes the second step of the argument, which is very important. God who really exists is greater than God who only exists in conception. This is the masterstroke of the argument. God who really exists is greater than God who exists only in conception. And your definition was, God is that than whom nothing greater can be conceived. Therefore, God who is only in conception is not an answer to the definition. What is conceived is therefore God who really exists. So the conclusion is, therefore, God exists. In other words, to think of God and not to think of Him as existing is impossible. That is the whole purport of the argument. Among the whole area of the world, there is not a single thing about which you can give this argument. It is only about God that you can give this argument. A winged horse can be conceived but may not exist. Because in the definition of the horse, such a thing does not come into the picture at all, which comes in the definition of God. Truly speaking, this argument, although many people have criticized it in many ways, it is fundamentally a correct argument. From the rational point of view, it is a very powerful argument. And when you think deeply on this question, you will find that this argument is a really convincing argument. But the formulation of it can be of a different kind. As I told you, one of the sharpest arguments against this proof was one which was formulated by Kant. And I shall repeat the argument that he had advanced. He had said that this argument rests on the assumption that existence is a predicate. And then I'll explain what is the meaning of a predicate. And it explains that anything that may be considered to be quantity, quality, relation, modality can be a part of a predicate. But in none of these, existence comes into the picture. Quantity, quality, relation, modality. None of them can be described as existence. They are all predicates. And the simple example that Kant had given was $100 in existence are not more than $100 in conception. I shall repeat. $100 in existence are not greater than $100 in conception. Of course, there is a difference between $100 in imagination and $100 in actuality. You can go to the market and get things against 100 actual dollars. So there is a difference between $100 in conception and 100 actual dollars. But that actuality does not add to the dollars. It doesn't become $101. If existence was a predicate, then it would have added something to hundredness. If this statue is red, then redness is added to the statue. Predicate always adds something to the subject. If existence was a predicate, it would have made difference to hundredness. So, according to Kant, existence is not a predicate. And the whole argument assumes that existence is a predicate, therefore the whole argument is erroneous. That was his argument. Now, as against this argument, supposing we agree and say that yes, it is true, existence is not a predicate, we may even agree that the formulation of Anselm in his argument seems to make a mistake of thinking that existence is a predicate. But then does it mean that existence is nothing? If it is not a predicate, does it mean that existence is nothing? So our formulation will now be on a different plane. It's the same argument, but formulated in different fashion. Existence is not a predicate, but existence is the subject. This is a new formulation. That existence is, really speaking, the subject. Predicates, quantity, quality, relation, modality, these are all predicates. Predicates can be conceived or may not be conceived. That is to say, all predicates are optional as far as conception is concerned. But there is one thing which can be conceived and you cannot help but conceiving, and that is existence. You do any conception, the only thing that you can conceive is existence. You must have seen one sentence of Sri Aurobindo where he says, I have shown you also last time that sentence, that existence without quantity, quality, relation, modality is not only something that can be conceived, but is the only thing that can be conceived. Other things, this object may be one or multiple or total, is optional. It may be, it may not be. It may be red or black or white. It may be white, it may not be white. We are not obliged to think that this object must be white necessarily. But whatever conception there may be of any kind, the first thing you have to conceive is that of existence. That is something which you cannot rub out from pure reason. Now, to show this, I had started actually right from the beginning a proposition and asked you, nothing exists, and asked you to conceive nothing exists. And you had seen that this statement is inconceivable.